So you developed contacts among local government officials and
basically, yes, just by living there, it was impossible not to.
Yeah.
My social life in Tabriz was very Iranian. Very Iranian-oriented, extremely. Mm-hmm. Unlike that of, I think, most other officers in the country. When I arrived in Tabriz, I already had a lot of Iranian friends. People from Peace Corps days, people I had met in Tehran, my assignment there, and people I kept meeting. I threw open, sort of, I've always run a very open door policy to my house, wherever I've been. I like having visitors. And I encouraged Iranian friends from other parts of the country to visit me. It was the consulate was spectacularly beautiful. You know, I keep going back to that, but it was really a wonderful place. And it was very pleasant to be a host there. It was no bother for me at all. I had an excellent cook, very good maid, I had a driver, gardeners, etc. All the people who could handle the laborious parts of being a host. I could call my maid at, you know, call my cook at 11 o'clock in the afternoon from the office, which was on the same compound, tell her I was bringing six people over for lunch, and an hour later when we got there for lunch, she would have a beautiful lunch laid out for six people. You know, so this sort of thing, it was no trouble at all and a pleasure to be able to sit at the head of the table and sort of preside and, you know, then step up and get up from the table, have coffee and leave, and everything was polished and waxed and made clean again in time for dinner that night. I was very, very rarely alone in the house, just a constant stream of visitors. I'd say in the course of my year and a half in Tabriz, from August of 77 through February, I had a couple of hundred house guests. Something else that I did in an attempt to get to know the people of the city and the people of the neighborhood. The Tabriz compound was, again, 12, 13 acres, whatever, surrounded by a high wall in the Persian style. It included huge gardens, formal gardens, this garden, that garden, rose gardens. We had 1,200 trees on the compound. This is in an area that's basically semi-arid. I had a huge, huge swimming pool, almost Olympic-sized. I had tennis courts, I had a volleyball, you know, court. I had a softball field. All of this beautifully maintained by the gardening staff. I had an almond orchard, you know, not I, but it was all there and usable. What I basically did was turn over a lot of the facilities to the neighborhood people. Up until that time, there had been a policy of restricting access to the facilities of the consulate, to house guests, or to the British, the general sort of Western foreign community. Well, I looked at the swimming pool, knew that there were no other pools in the city of Tabriz, or just one or two that were not really clean, not really suitable for families. So my first summer there, the first full summer, 1978, early on in the summer, I had met a large number of people who were involved in sports in the city, you know, teachers, coaches, etc. I got in touch with a couple of them and told them that I wanted to start using the pool for children or families from the immediate area of the consulate. You know, all the, it was a not a tremendously good neighborhood, it was sort of lower middle class around the consulate. But basically passed out the word for the coaches that anyone who wanted to could get a pass or an identification card which would allow them access to the pool. I don't swim. It seemed a crime to me to have this huge swimming pool with all the changing rooms and showers and facilities, you know, sitting in the middle of an almond orchard and never to use it. And I could see no reason whatsoever to turn it over to the British expat community. I wasn't there as an envoy to the Brits. So I passed the word around and basically within a couple of days, a week or so, I had about 100 people or so who signed up, you know, families from the neighborhood.
to use the pool on the days that it was going to be open. We had it open for the public, I think, 3 or 4 days a week in the summer. I did want privacy sometimes in the compound, especially over weekends when, you know, my staff wouldn't be around to control access. But it turned out to be, you know, so, you know, I thought it was really great. I got to meet a lot of people that way, number one. But also, it exposed a large number of people from the neighborhood to the consulate facilities, to what was there behind the wall. And in the course of the summer, the head swimming coach, oh, I arranged with the coaches. They came and did this for free because they were interested too. And they set up a normal neighborhood program of teaching children from the neighborhood how to swim.
Was the first summer you were here there or the second summer?
Well, I got there in August of 77, so it was already too late.
Yeah, right.
The reason all this started is because I had an Iranian friend who visited me in the winter. Somebody who was visiting was a professional football player, a soccer player from Tehran. And he and his fiancée were visiting me. He was out walking outside the consulate walls, stopped to watch a group of guys, you know, say teenagers from the neighborhood playing football outside on the street. They knew who he was. He was a pretty well-known football player. And asked him what he was doing in Tabriz, and he told him he was visiting me and, you know, was staying at the consulate. One of the guys said, "I've lived here my whole life. I've never seen what's on the other side of the walls." He told me that, and it started me thinking. And I decided, this is crazy. I don't need all this for myself. So I basically turned it over. But anyway, in the course of that next summer, the coaches told me that they had taught swimming, you know, trained swimmers, something like 50 or 60 children. And they had wonderful classes. I'd go out and watch them once in a while. And classes to which the mothers could come. You know, I'd walk out to the swimming pool on the far edge of the consulate compound, and there'd be 10, 15, 20 women in veils sitting out there watching their children. It was considered a safe, clean place to come. Nobody was going to hassle them. And they could do this with their families. It worked out very, very well. I also turned over literally the football field to a couple of teams in the neighborhood, just for the guys in the neighborhood who wanted to play football. I always thought it was a crime they were playing in the streets, so they had access to, and they used it quite a bit.
Just for practice?
Just for practice of their own games, etc. Yeah. The American community also was always welcome there, and they would come over quite a bit, you know, either to the pool or to play tennis or whatever. It was almost, especially, you know, from, say, spring of 78 until late autumn, it was more like being in a park, in a, you know, public park than a consulate. It worked out very well.
Sounds pleasant.
Yeah, they were the same guys who then attacked the consulate, you know, the next winter. But at least this way, they had a way to get a picture of the interior layout.
I guess so. What were some of the local officials, as you got to know, local government officials in Tabriz that you would have contact with?
The governor's office.
Yeah.
Tabriz was the capital of the East Azerbaijan, so we had a full governor's office there. I knew, well, the governor, lieutenant governors, etc., fairly well professionally. The mayor's office, certainly, I always knew who the mayor was, and, you know, his chief assistants. That was normal.
Calling names of some of these people?
I'm sure, I'd rather not go into it, though.
Oh, okay. I see.
But I got to know them quite well, and their families too, in most cases. The basic top government structure I knew very well. I knew some of the police, although police kept their distance. I had lots of police friends in Tehran. In fact, I would stay with police friends in Tehran normally when I went there, you know, to visit the embassy. But the ones I knew in Tehran were my old students from Peace Corps days, who had then gone to the police academy to become officers. So we were old friends. The Savak officials, I always knew the head of Savak, but really had no social life or anything else. And I would pay the courtesy call when a new one came in, or once in a great while go over. But it was really limited. I think I was in the Savak headquarters maybe 3-4 times in the course of a year and a half. It was easy to get to know them because they all required services from the consulate. all of the officials, of course, and families, friends who were going to the United States. So it was a basically decent professional relationship. There were some good people there. Several members of the local government, the deputy governor, the mayor, a couple of others, were also on the board of directors of the Iran-America Society. So I got to know them in meetings through that way.
So the Iran-America Society had some branches in
Had a branch in Tabriz. It was a very active, yeah. Very large branch.
Mm-hmm.
Several hundred students in a particular time. Some good teachers, good directors.
Mm-hmm.
The last director is now in the Foreign Service.
They had English language training, plus they had cultural activities.
Yes. Basically English language training, but also less on the cultural side, but there was a scattering of that too. The occasional art show or something of that sort, or films.
Now the instructions that Nicholas wrote also asked you to learn what you could about political opposition and its activities in and around Tabriz. How much did you learn about the political opposition in the period before February 78 when the big demonstrations occurred in Tabriz?
There was always political opposition in an organized fashion, very little. I had tried repeatedly but very unsuccessfully to get to know some of the clergy, the Muslim clergy. I knew the Armenian clergy. I had no luck whatsoever. I think probably that my requests for meetings were not being passed on to the clergy. I would say that. Certainly there was a very, very strong, very, very strong bias with my local staff against my meeting anyone in the clergy. I assumed then, and I think I'm right, that they were afraid of Savak reaction to that, hitting them as the people who would arrange contacts and meetings. So basically with the clergy, nothing. In the course of 1978, I met a couple of members of the clergy, one of whom was later defrocked. and another one of whom became very high up in the Tabriz Revolution, and then also fell out of favor as the years went by. So I think he's basically left Tabriz now and is off doing something quietly in Tehran, trying to have people forget his name.
Were there any people who were involved in the old nationalist opposition?
Sure. But that wasn't all that active.
Yeah.
They would sit around and talk,
but
they weren't organizing or doing anything. The events in Tabriz in 1978 in February, that got them by surprise. Probably more by surprise than it did us. It just that there was no concept of that. Opposition in a formal way, I knew the doctors and the lawyers who didn't like the system. I was always talking, I kept meeting people who didn't like the Pahlavi family, but it was just sort of a general discontent, which took more and more vocal expression in 78. But in 77, I just wasn't seeing it. I was seeing social factors, demographic factors, general sort of annoyance and irritation and dissatisfaction, but nothing that you could really say was an organized group. On the other hand, if there had been, the American consul was the last person they would have wanted to be in touch with.
That's also true.
I was the symbol of with the big flag and the coat of arms and this huge compound and the driver and the police guard. I was not the sort of person, ex officio, with whom you would be in contact if you were opposition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How are we to time now?
35 more minutes.
Okay. The embassy was also interested in seeing what you could find out about the Kurds. You were requested to develop contacts with them and to determine, this is a quote, determine the potential for supporting resistance, for supporting dissidents in Iraq, unquote. Was that, did you, there's a large Kurdish population in that part of the country. Did you get to know any?
Not in Tabriz. Tabriz is totally Turkish.
Yeah.
I knew a lot of Kurds, but not of that sort. I knew a lot of Kurds who were dissatisfied, but they had economic and historical reasons for dissatisfaction. Again, it wasn't vocal, it wasn't organized, but I could see. And I also had very little time.
Yeah.
I could go out to Kurdistan or to the Kurdish areas and spend an evening with friends or, you know, visit somebody, but again, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't living out there. And you cannot show up in a chauffeur-driven car with a flag on it and expect to have a local Kurdish opposition come out and tell you their plans.
These are the Earth of Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay. Another area you were to check out was the university scene. How much time did you have in contact with students, professors at the university?
I knew a large number of students and, you know, faculty, you know, professionally and socially. But
there was one university in the city, or was there another one?
There was Azad Babagan University,
right.
University of Tabriz, it was basically called.
Yeah.
There were one correspondence school, one branch of my own former Peace Corps school. And in fact, the director and the deputy director of the branch had both been former students of mine. So I knew them quite well to go and have dinner with, have lunch with. But again, up until 1978, you would only get general statements of dissatisfaction or unease or whatever.
Okay. It's probably a good time to break off.